Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to a brand new Arsblog Arscast right here on arsblog.com. How are you? Hope you're well. Thank you very much indeed, as always, for being here. As you can hear from my voice, I am not in what you would call tip-top shape. I've been unwell pretty much all week. Started feeling bad in the early hours of Tuesday morning, woke up, couldn't get back to sleep, had that terrible thing where, I don't know if this happens to you or not, but if I can't get to sleep, or if I wake up and I can't get back to sleep, my brain goes into this kind of, I don't know if you call it overdrive, but it's sort of, there's a lot going on. And then it gets fixated on one thing, and it's usually a song, a piece of a song, not just a whole song, but like just a snippet of a song over and over and over. And you're lying there going, oh, fuck, shut up song. I don't even like this song. Why is this song going around in my head? And pretty much everybody you talk to, or I've spoken to anyway here, is like, oh, yeah, you're sick. Yeah, I had that last week. Or my wife had that last week. Oh, the kids had that last week. Yeah, oh, I know. My aunt had that. She's been in. It's like, oh. So there's some kind of cold or respiratory thing going around. I did obviously do a test for COVID, came up negative. I did another test, came up negative. So it's something else. It's not flu, I don't think, because if it was flu, I would be lying down on my face and I would not be talking into a microphone, I can tell you. So it's some kind of cold thing. And it's, you know, jolly unpleasant. But hey, there are worse things in the world, I guess. And I'm just feeling maybe a little bit sorry for myself, which I think I'm entitled to do on my own podcast. Nevertheless, we have a show for you today. And obviously it, what's the word I'm looking for here? Preludes. It's fuck. See, this is what happens. My brain doesn't, it's a prelude to the return of football, perhaps. That's what I was trying to say. I had the words in my head there a second ago and then they went. Anyway, football is back. On Monday, we play West Ham on December 26th after the break for the World Cup and everything else. So there's plenty to get our teeth into, not least of which is an interview that Mikel Arteta did with Jamie Carragher on Sky Sports for Monday Night Football, which of course went out on a Wednesday, just to keep everyone on their toes, I guess. I mean, I know the Monday Night Football thing, is it? That's the name of the show, but it's the name of the show because it goes out on a Monday. And this was Wednesday. Why don't I just call it Wednesday Night Football? I don't think there'd have been too many complaints, would there? The Monday Night Football name aficionados, MNF stands, might have risen up and taken to social media to express their displeasure. As the wise lady said all those years ago, ain't nobody got time for that. So with me, to look ahead to the return of football, to talk about the Carragher stuff and to talk about a few of the bits and pieces that Mikel Arteta raised, not raised, but spoke about in his press conference today, it's Andrew Allen. Hello, Andrew.
Hey there. It's nice to be back. Something to talk about.
Yes, football. Are you ready? Are you ready for this? Have you sort of psyched yourself up for what's to come? The nonstop, relentless worry and nail-biting and everything else that's going to be the second half of this season?
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I'm already feeling kind of like the basking period is over and now we're into the hopes dashed period, maybe. We'll see. But I'm bracing myself.
Full of festive cheer today, obviously. Yeah.
You know it. I just haven't had a drink. It's too early in the day so far.
Yeah. Well, look, it's getting dark out the window here. So I think that is the cutoff point, isn't it? Once it gets dark, you know, in the winter, that seems fair enough, particularly in the sort of long days of winter. We'll talk a bit about
Mikel Arteta and what he talked about at his press conference today when he was looking ahead to West Ham, because there are obviously some issues, some bits and pieces when we think about transfers, when we think about the squad and all the rest of it. But you are now an expert in the Jamie Carragher, Mikel Arteta interview, having done a 6,000-word transcription for Arseblog News. And I thank you, as I'm sure many of the readers do as well, for doing that. I'd like to make it clear I didn't make you do that in any way. People think I'm some kind of bastard for me, do a transcript of that.
No, that was all self-punishment. I say punishment. I mean, I sat down to watch it, and I was always going to watch it and maybe make a few notes because I knew we were going to chat about it. And then one thing led to another, and I just sort of started in the middle, worked to the end, and then thought, well, now that I've got to the end, I better go back to the beginning and transcribe that as well. So it's done. It's good to have these things on the record. I did something similar for the Michael Calvin interview that he did.
That's right, yeah, yeah.
I think secretly in the back of my head, I'm thinking, well, if Arteta turns out to be a real success, it'd be good to document all of this just in case we want to do a book.
Fair enough. Well, we've got it there now. That's great. As does everyone else, though, in fairness, who might want to do a book about Mikel Arteta. So
fucking stop that right now.
Yeah. Guys, hands off, even though these words are in the public domain. What was your impression of this interview? I thought it was really interesting because there were so many facets to it, you know, from talking about his move into coaching, some of the tactical elements of it, and you know, what he sees as his job and his remit at Arsenal. You know, the more I see him, look, I've always been impressed with him when he talks. You know, the first interview he ever did at Arsenal, where he turned up and said all the right things and things that give you hope, he continues to do that, but he's doing it now from a slightly different position, isn't he? Where he's not looking at a football club that's in disarray, standing on the cliffs of doom, wondering whether or not it should chuck itself off. He's standing on one that's at the top of the Premier League table. And it does give you a slightly different perspective on the things that he says and how he says them. I mean, is it just a consequence when somebody has that kind of clear vision, that kind of idea of what they want to do and how they want to do it, that if you can execute that well, then the consequence of that is a measure of success, if that makes sense? Like, we could all have our own ideas, but you've got to be actually really good at the other stuff. You know, we can all talk about what the good idea is, but putting it in motion, putting it into reality is a different thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think what we're definitely seeing there is a guy who feels a bit more confident about his status as a coach, because everybody is talking about the fact that Arsenal are doing well, and the reason why they're doing well is because we're 3 years into a 5-year plan that he started executing, and he always said there were going to be ups and downs, and we're now kind of moving in the right direction. So I think he was also quite relaxed. I think he you know, talking to a fellow former professional, I think maybe gave him that kind of room to talk on a sort of on a level playing field, really, with someone. And I thought Carragher's questions were good. I thought there must be a shed load of stuff that they left out, because, you know, the interview was effectively split into three parts. One, a kind of chat about his background, a second bit where they were standing over the tactics board talking about Arsenal this season, and then some kind of quick fire questions in the third section. But you know, the stuff around the tactics, you imagine, could have gone on for hours, and there were players that they didn't talk about, including, I thought, interestingly, Gabriel Jesus, which I assume must have been put on the cutting room floor off the back of the fact that he's, you know, injured and stuff. I thought it was really interesting. I mean, a lot of what we've heard, especially people like you and me who are kind of reading Arteta, you know, quotes all the time and, you know, have a pretty good understanding about what he's about at this point, you know, a lot of that information was out in the public domain already, but there are little snippets, and it's interesting to see him talk in more detail about particularly some of the tactical stuff. I still think he was relatively guarded, you know, he's as he was in the Amazon documentary. I mean, I don't think you're going to find a manager like him going, I just want to tell the world exactly what's making Arsenal tick right now, because, you know, that's just a straight pathway to your own downfall. So, but by and large, I enjoyed it. I mean, it was a kind of interesting setup. I haven't seen him looking quite so relaxed. I assume it was, you know, in the last couple of weeks this was done, as opposed to right after the Wolves game. But yeah, it was really interesting. And I think, you know, I think particularly some of the stuff around the current setup. So Ben White, William Saliba, Zinchenko's purchase, the Granit Xhaka stuff, all of that stuff was actually really, really interesting. I don't know if there's anything particular we want to start around, but I thought the fact that he basically said when Saliba came back, I just had to put him in the team. And knowing that Saliba was going to be there, he was also very much like, well, he'd had the thought about wanting to play Ben White right back already, previously last season. That was something that he could then make work. He seemed absolutely desperate. I think there's a real link between the Granit Xhaka stuff, so real, real emphasis on unlocking something in Xhaka.
Yeah, I thought that was fascinating, actually, when he was talking about Granit Xhaka, because he was giving a player who's been at the club for a long time, right, and who's had his ups and downs and all the rest, and we don't need to go over those, we don't need to document them again. But what I thought was fascinating about this was the fact that he said to him, look, we obviously think you can do this. We need to unlock something in you. But if you can't do it, then we're going to have to, you know, look elsewhere, which I think is really an interesting piece of man management, isn't it? It's like, we want you to do this, but at the same time, if you can't, then, you know, we've got to look to draw the curtain on your Arsenal career a little bit. So it's kind of stick and carrot all at the same time.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you probably use different tactics for different players, but someone like Xhaka laying down the gauntlet to him and basically saying, look, we think you can do this incredible role further up the pitch. Go and do it. He's the type of player who wants to learn. He's obviously very self-motivated. He likes a challenge. I think Arteta himself said he never, you know, there's a player there who never backs down. And that's one of the reasons why he's getting picked by every single Arsenal manager. But yeah, he did. He basically said to him, I spoke to him at the end of the second season and said, I need to unlock something in your brain. You're so comfortable and confident playing in this area that you've forgotten that actually what is going to win us the game is up here in the final third. The team now demands somebody here. So unless you unlock that, I'm going to have to do something about it. And he took it straight away. He's a very intelligent player. He came in pre-season fitter than ever, slimmer than ever. He knew that if he wanted to take the team to another level, we had to change his role.
I mean, talk about rising to the challenge based on what he's done so far this season.
And to be honest, you know, I don't think there was many Arsenal fans out there who looked at Granit Xhaka and thought that's the role that he could, that's a role that he could play. I mean, we were so kind of programmed to assume he was a deep lying anchor that the idea of him basically playing like Aaron Ramsey was beyond my imagination, that's for sure. So fair play to the manager. But he also talked obviously about, you know, a lot of things being about partnerships around the pitch. And I think, you know, being able to play Xhaka in that role necessitated having a left back who could play more inverted. Obviously, Alex Zinchenko's been playing that, but also Tierney wherever possible. And all of that was then linked to being able to have Martinelli play, you know, on the line at the front, you know, being able to get the best out of him. So it's all about connections. And I guess, you know, having also touched in the earlier part of the interview about the need to be pragmatic when he first joined and basically having square pegs and round holes, he has now, after 3 years, got to a point where he has jigsaw puzzle pieces that actually fit together.
Yeah.
And I guess that, more than anything, kind of gave me confidence, because I was kind of thinking, you know, I think a lot of Arsenal fans probably think, what are we going to do without Gabriel Jesus in the next few months? But actually, when you think about it, if everybody in the team knows their role and everyone who comes into the team knows their role, more than anything, that will help on a day-to-day basis in a way that we just haven't had that for years.
Yeah. And I guess he's built that kind of trust among these players and among this team to say, well, look, we don't have Gabriel Jesus, but this is how we're going to cope. This is the way that we're going to deal with it. But I remember, and you'll remember as well, an interview he did some years ago where he talked about his ideal setup at Arsenal being 4-3-3. And he said something along the lines of, we lack the specificity in terms of players to be able to do that. I think it's interesting that we're now in a situation where I think he's got that for the most part across the pitch. And one of those specificities, if you like, has come from an internal solution when we talk about Xhaka and the way that he's done it. And as you say, the reason Xhaka can thrive in that role is because you do have that left back, whether it's Zinchenko, whether it's Tierney. That's why they were so after Tierney. I guess to an extent, that's why they were after Lisandro Martinez as well, to play at left back. He's somebody who also played in midfield or is used to playing in central areas, because very often the left back, when he inverts, is playing maybe where a high up center half might play, you know? So you can see that there was a plan there for that.
I mean, he did touch, I think Carragher pressed on him about how far in advance he's planning. And he says, well, you always want to know 18 months ahead, you know, how you want the team to look and feel, but you don't always necessarily, and I'm paraphrasing here, recognize who it is who's going to be doing those roles, because players surprise you. Some adapt, as has been the case with Xhaka. Some young players might come in and they're able to, you know, progress and develop in a way that we weren't expecting. But yeah, there's an overriding philosophy and a sense of how do we control games and how do we control the pitch and how do we control the spaces on the pitch. But the personnel, you're never quite sure. And I think, you know, the Saliba situation this season is definitely clear. I mean, it sounds as like Saliba came back in pre-season and Arteta looked at one moment him and was like, oh my God, like the development in the 1 year has been crazy. We have to use him. This gives us different options. Some of it's luck, obviously.
Yeah.
You know, you make your own luck as well, I think, along the way.
The Saliba stuff was interesting as well, wasn't it? Because he was talking about like a moment where he dribbled himself out of trouble.
Yeah.
And he basically said, yeah, he can do that, but why did he have to do that?
Yeah.
Because he made a mistake. You know,
he made a mistake. And also he said, he basically suggested that other players on the pitch weren't well placed. So he hates centre-backs dribbling because it means that the guys who are supposed to be in front of him fulfilling their roles aren't where they're supposed to be. Mm. He's basically just taking on the onus of making a pass by dribbling. I mean, again, really, really interesting stuff. So presumably we won't expect to see too many of the centre-backs kind of carrying the ball forward like kind of big slaphead Harry Maguire used to do.
No, I wouldn't have thought so. I mean, you mentioned Martinelli there. And I thought it was very interesting where he talked about him, you know, playing wide. That really stood out to me that, like, he said, Martinelli has to play on the last line and he needs to play wide because it's his quality. And Martinelli, when he's asked about what his favourite position is, he says it's wide on the left. That's where he likes to play. You know, he can cut inside. We know the kind of danger he can pose from out there. But then when we do think about what we do without Gabriel Jesus, and I'm making the assumption here that Arsenal aren't going to bring in a striker in the January window. I'd be really surprised if we were in the market for a striker, unless there was somebody available on loan that we could bring in till the end of the season. I don't see us splurging or spending money for a striker who, you know, could end up being like a third wheel and you've got a, you know, big transfer or a transfer fee and wages and all that kind of stuff invested in a guy who doesn't really play. But at the same time, he's been quite clear about, you know, what he wants from the squad and how much more he wants from the squad. And we'll turn to that in a few minutes. But is clamor the right word? I'm not necessarily sure it is, but there is certainly a school of thought that Martinelli could play as a centre forward, and I can absolutely see it. I can see the kind of centre forward he would be very different from Eddie, for example. Maybe a little closer to Gabriel Jesus in terms of the energy he brings, but, I mean, do you think Martinelli wide is fixed, or is it a case that over the course of the couple of months when we're going to be without Gabriel Jesus, he may well need to play the odd game here and there, you know, simply because we can't play Eddie in every game. I guess it's dependent as well on having somebody else for the left-hand side.
Yeah, I mean, Arteta does at one point say that all coaches need a quality and it's adaptability.
Mm.
And I suppose with Martinelli that if necessary, he might have to deploy him there. I mean, let's say Eddie Nketiah, God forbid, gets a knock in the first 5 minutes against West Ham. Emile Smith Rowe isn't available. who do you put up front to lead the line? And I think everybody would be going, well, Gabriel Martinelli's a guy who's played some games there. He did so when Aubameyang was out a few years ago, didn't he? Scored that goal against Chelsea, and you know, when as a striker. So I think there's a sense that, yeah, I mean, I could easily see it happening, but it's clear that Arteta would prefer not to have that as the option. But ultimately, if you can shift the way that the team plays and someone can play out wide and score their goals, I mean, Aubameyang scored all his goals from out wide. Thierry Henry scored a lot of his goals from out wide. You know, being a central striker doesn't mean that you're guaranteed to get goals there above and beyond what you might get on the wing. So it might just be a sort of shifting of how the team looks to operate, which again is something that I could imagine from a tactical perspective Arteta might see as a challenge, but one he'd be up for.
The way he thinks about the game, he talks about, you know, from his early days in Barcelona, how Pep Guardiola was like his idol from 15 when they first met and everything else. I thought that was funny where he said, yeah, Pep called me at 30. And he said, I'm going to do this thing in England. I want you to come with. Mikel Arteta joined Arsenal at the age of 29. So, you know, for Pep to be calling him at the age of 30. But it was interesting to hear that he had done you know, bits and pieces of work. Pep will call him up and say, you know, what would you do against this team? Or, you know, tell me about this team in England. And I remember, you know, when he did leave, when he finished his playing days and there was a role for him at Arsenal to work in the academy, a coaching role, and it was there. And I remember, you know, there was maybe a bit of criticism of him for not going straight from his playing days here and going behind the scenes. But when you think about it, the ability or the possibility of going to learn from Pep and going to learn at a team that's going to be competing on the highest front every season, that would be very, very hard to resist, you know? So even with your Arsenal blinkers on, whatever it might be, for Mikel Arteta, in terms of his own career, it feels like a much more of a challenge, obviously, but the reward, I suggest, is probably much higher from taking that risk than it would have been than going and coaching Arsenal's under 15s or under 18s or whatever it is. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that or that can't be rewarding, but if your ultimate ambition is to become a manager, then, you know, doing what he did, taking the pathway he took, is obviously been of huge benefit to him and ultimately for us right now.
I mean, look, there's absolutely no doubt that Guardiola groomed him from a very young age, you know, not in a sort of weird way, but obviously he spotted something in him and it was just like, this guy, I need him. I trust him. I think more than anything, I trust him. And it was interesting that Guardiola was calling him up to get tips on English sides that Manchester City were facing, you know, that Bayern Munich and Barcelona were going to face in the Champions League. You know, Arteta was already feeding into that. God knows how many times we played them over that period, but I doubt the calls were made straight to Arteta on those instances. But, you know, what I find really interesting is that, you know, I had the pleasure of interviewing Arteta on behalf of Arsblog all those years ago. Yeah. And when I chatted to him, that was not a guy who seemed convinced that his future lay in coaching. You know, he seemed quite reticent to commit to something which he knew would completely change his family or maintain a kind of similarly upheaval for the family dynamic for a long period of time. But obviously something changed there and he decided, well, actually, this is what I want to do. His wife was fine with it. He realized that he could, you know, do all of that alongside being a dad. And it accelerated quite quickly. But he's so much more confident. And I guess if you've been working with someone like Guardiola and that person believes in you, and you're given the freedom to be your own man and to grow in that space and work with incredible players. I mean, what an incredible introduction. What a confidence boost. I mean, who wouldn't want to be handpicked by, you know, and to have a mentor when you're that age, taking on a new job, and for that mentor to be arguably the greatest manager we've had in the modern era. I mean, yeah, it's an interesting story. And obviously as you say, we're benefiting from it at the moment. But I think what he saw in Pep is obviously this single-mindedness as well, which he's experienced firsthand, and an absolute belief in his own philosophy. And that maintaining that belief in that philosophy and not giving in when the naysayers start kind of piping up left, right, and center has been absolutely fundamental to his ability to get through these first 3 years. Because as we know, he's had everything chucked at him, stuff that other managers have been through and stuff that no managers had ever faced before with the COVID pandemic and whatnot. So, yeah, I mean, I think that is an absolutely priceless education he's had.
Yeah. He does like to bang the sort of day-by-day drum. Because Carragher asked him at some point, he said, where he says he has like a five-phase plan, you know, to get where we need to get to. And, you know, Carragher says, are you ahead or behind? And clearly we're ahead of where he thought we would be. But then he says, you know, we have to take it day by day. That's the secret. And that has been consistent throughout, hasn't it? That even when things are going well, he's reluctant to get carried away is not quite the right word. I think he wants to give everyone their dues, you know, to give everyone their credit and everything else. But he will reiterate that next game, day by day, you know, one game at a time, all that kind of stuff. And I think that's part and parcel of what you hear from his players as well. When they talk about where we are and what we're doing, they're pretty consistent with their messaging on that too.
Well, I think it's, you know, he has a five-year plan where he wants to take the club, let's say, and he has to have that plan to give foundations, especially with the owners, with the technical director. There needs to be some solid sense of everybody being and having a direction to head towards. But for the players, not, you know, from the get-go, not all of those players were ever going to be there after the 5 years. You know, their day-to-day is really, you know, what's the next game? And I guess you have to appeal to them on a level where the next day is the most important. The next game is the most important, because that ultimately will decide whether or not you make the entire journey or not. Because if you're not good enough, or you're not paying attention, or you know, don't adhere to the non-negotiables, as was the case with some of the players, then that's that. You can't be part of this. And again, he was very clear in the interview talking about the Aubameyang situation, that it wasn't just Aubameyang. It was about several players, and it was a general sense that you can't afford to have anybody, and it doesn't matter what level that person is, not pulling in the same direction. Any excess weight stops the boat from going faster, and we want to go fast in the direction that we want to go.
Yeah.
Again, paraphrasing, but he's big on that boat.
He is. Yeah, Captain Arteta of the good ship Arsenal. One of the things, you know, that you mentioned, where when it comes to tactics, I think he can be quite vague, and he can be quite vague on many aspects of what's going on at the football club. For example, he's asked today, this is the first press conference that he's held in 5 or 6 weeks, whatever it is. So he's asked obviously about Gabriel Jesus and suggestions that he could be out till February. He says, no, I never gave a date. That's not the words I used. It's difficult to put a time frame. I prefer not to give any dates, right? So even something like injury news, what have you, he can be really, really guarded about what he says. But when it comes to transfers, when it comes to recruitment, he's way more open and way more specific about what he would like and what he expects. So we've had examples in the past where he talked, you know, in the last window about more firepower. When things weren't going quite as well, he talked about the need to raise the level of the squad. And the only way that that can be done is via the transfer market. And even today, he talks about how we're going to be active. Active always means looking to strengthen the team. This squad still doesn't have the luxury of not maximizing every single window. And we have to do that because it's really important. And then the quote that came out of the Carragher thing, when he's talking about the squad size, he's talking about being able to pick a, you know, a different team in midweek for the Europa League games and then a consistent side for the weekend in the Premier League. He said, we are going to have more resources and more players to be able to do that. It is the one thing that he is really upfront about when you compare it to many of the other aspects of management that he's questioned on.
Yeah, I mean, I the way I look at it is that what he's saying in public there is something he's obviously conveyed behind closed doors to the management. It's not like this is the first time the Cronkies have heard that Arsenal need to be active and that he's urging them to get their checkbook out. I mean, they've been backing him in the transfer market as he's wanted for the last few windows, I would say. But it is interesting, I guess, on a psychological level, if you're one of the existing squad and you hear that we're still short and all the rest of it, does that kind of give you a bit of a rocket up the arse or kind of keep you on your toes because you know that you're never going to be, you know, completely safe being at Arsenal? There's no opportunity to rest and, you know, relax. You need to be on it. That could be something. In terms of the players that we've already made contact with, you know, maybe there's a subliminal message to those guys with whom we're already having conversations. You know, this is what we want. This has got it. You know, it's got to be a player who makes a difference, this kind of thing. I don't know. There are lots of different ways you could potentially look at it or read it. And maybe some of them I'm overreading it. But yeah, I mean, he is curiously open about it in a way that, let's say, Arsene Wenger never was. Mm. I guess Arsene always treated the money like it was not his money, whereas Arteta's like, well, it's, if the funds are there, this is what we've got to do.
Yeah.
So yeah, it takes a bit of getting used to after 22 years of Arsene, but I mean it's fine. It's what he wants to do. Whether or not it counts for or against us in the transfer market, I don't really know. I mean, it's
I often think that's overblown, you know, the idea that if you tell people you want a player, you know, the price goes up by X. I think that's kind of often overblown.
Yeah, I mean, at this stage, I would imagine that most of the conversations that we want to have been had with potential targets. And, you know, unless there was an emergency and we had to spin something really quickly, in which case I'm not sure this would necessarily be applicable as a damaging take.
Do you think our position as a football club at the top of the table and with him having brought us there, do you think that gives him a bit more oomph, if you like, to sort of speak about this kind of thing? Because it's one thing for a manager who's finished eighth two times in a row to say we need better players, because, you know, that's pretty obvious. But if you're Mikel Arteta right now, and I think last season and this season will have gone a considerable distance to changing the way that people think about Arteta as a manager and as a coach. You know, there were questions, and I understand the questions, and I can see why there were questions. But you would never be sitting there going, oh, I'm a bit worried now that one of the big clubs might come and try and pinch Mikel Arteta away from us. But as soon as you get a team going the way he's got one going, that looks like it's capable of mounting a title challenge, whether we hang on, I don't know, of course, but we're playing good football. It's a young team. It's an exciting team. You can see how there's so much more room for development and for it to grow. Do you think if you're the Cronkies, for example, you're thinking to yourself, maybe, you know, we kind of got to give this guy what he wants, because if he doesn't get it here, chances are he could get it somewhere else. And there'd be clubs interested in him. And I know he just signed a new contract, so this is purely hypothetical. I just wonder about that aspect of it now, because it is different to make those, demands is the wrong word, you know what I mean? But to say the things that he said when you're top of the table, it is different from when you're sort of mid-table-ish.
Yeah. I mean, I don't doubt that there are clubs. And look, he now has history with three of the biggest clubs in the world as a player with PSG, as a player with Barcelona, as a former coach at Manchester City. You know, those are not three sharks you want circling around your club, trying to snatch your manager. You know, been in that situation before, and it can be unsettling. At the same time, I don't in any way, shape or form doubt Arteta's sort of belief and desire to see through his, you know, this project is everything to him at the moment. I think he realizes that, you know, if this is a passion project more than anything, you know, he feels a genuine connection with the club. And I think, he needs to make it work. I think the Kroenke situation is a really interesting one, because we don't really know what they're thinking at this point. They were obviously as up for the Super League as the Americans at Manchester United, as the Americans at Liverpool, and those guys are, you know, jumping ship. Maybe they look at this opportunity that, you know, and the Glazers and the Henrys, maybe they're looking at this as a sort of opportunity to maximize, you know, Arsenal's potential worth in the, you know, in the market over the course of the next couple of years. Because there's a void to fill, right? Chelsea aren't quite there off the back of their changeover. Mm. There's an opportunity for Arsenal to go big. And if they put some money in now, maybe they'll make all of that money back and more from a potential buyer in a couple of years' time. I don't know. It's really hard to read their situation. But potentially something there.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't sort of saying that Arteta was going, you know, back me or else kind of thing. Yeah. I just think that if you are in a position that we're in and you're the guy who's, you know, gone a long way to get us there, when those words come out, and like, don't get me wrong, I think he would say the same thing if we were in third place or fourth place or second place, you know, I think he would, because it's obvious what he's saying, that this is a squad that needs a bit more depth to be able to cope and everything else. But I just feel like it gives you a little bit more, I don't know, a little bit more weight when you're talking about this kind of stuff going into
January. The other thing is, there's a genuine title challenge potentially on the cards here. And if you're an owner of a club, even if you're one who said in the past you wouldn't get involved in football if you wanted to win trophies, you must be tempted to kind of throw, well, actually, there's a real opportunity to do what we've done at some of our other franchises, whether that's, you know, win the Super Bowl or win the Stanley Cup and what have you. So, I think I'd be motivated if I were the Cronkies. I think I'd be motivated by what I see from Arteta. Why not reward him? I mean, I think the new deal was was timely and useful, and everybody was happy with it. And go give him the tools. Go give him the tools to get the job done now.
How much do you think that? I was going to say publicized. It wasn't really publicized, but of course you can't do anything anymore anywhere because everyone's got a camera and someone will see you somewhere. And we know that Mikel Arteta and Tim Lewis and Edu were in the States to meet with Stan and Josh Kroenke. How much confidence does that give you that January, like, they're going to really try and do something this January? Because if it was a case that, like, nah, we're not giving you any more money, there's no money available in January, that's a conversation they could have on their WhatsApp group or, you know, remotely. Whereas going to meet the ownership, putting their heads together, coming up with a plan, understanding what the financial boundaries perhaps are, you know, what is their budget? What can they do? You know, what are they capable of doing in the market and how far they will be backed by the ownership? That sounds like the kind of thing that you would definitely do in person.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I know that Arteta went and did a jaunt over to the States in last January, didn't he? Mm. It was a very quick one. It seemed a little bit more like, what kind of a decision are we making with Aubameyang rather than who we're buying? But I think in-person relationships are very, very important. It helps build trust. You get a better idea of who it is that you're working with. And I mean, look, I'd be surprised if any consummate business owner didn't want to have regular contact with their board of directors and the people managing their asset. It makes sense. I do think that a lot of it is also Arteta is absolutely, he seems absolutely fascinated right now with this learning from other sports thing, which is another thread that kind of ran through the Carragher interview, but one that's also kind of floated out into the public domain via the Eddie Jones quotes that came up a couple of months ago, and the fact that he's part of these chats with other elite coaches from various different sports. And I think if you've got access to those coaches via the five franchises that the Cronkies have, I think it's five, then maybe there was some invitations and some meet and greets and some kind of, you know, introductions made on that as well. Yeah, I mean, it makes sense for Arteta to try and maximise those contacts as well. So it works two ways.
He talked about the kind of player he wanted. He said, we want to get the right profile, the right player, and a player that is really going to impact the team and take us to the next level. That's quite a thing to say when your team is top of the table and has probably been the best team in England this season so far. I know there's a long way to go, but to take the team to the next level, another level, whatever you want to call it, that's got to be a hell of a player. Or does he mean maybe that this is a player that can bring something that we don't already have?
I mean, Jesus brought us something we didn't already have. I think that's a next level game changing player. I think you could it's harder to argue that with Zinchenko while the injury issues are so, you know, are so frustrating. But Saliba's done that, I guess. Like, if you can find another player who can impact your team to the same degree that they have in such a short space of time, hit the ground running, I mean, that's everything you could possibly want. I don't think it's anything, I don't think it's that different from stuff he said in the past. I mean, you always want to sign players better than the ones you had. I mean, it would be completely pointless exercise if you deliberately signed.
Did it the other way around. Yeah, yeah, that would be no good.
Although we have done that in the past, perhaps not quite, you know, deliberately. But yeah, I mean, yeah, that completely makes sense. I like the idea of him laying down the gauntlet to whoever comes in as well. Just like, you know, we're going to go all out for you, but you got to deliver the goods.
Yeah.
Believe in you. So, yeah, it remains to be seen who that target is. Obviously, we're not entirely sure, aside from David Ornstein talking about the Mihailo Mudrik fella. And presumably, given what he's talking about in terms of short of resources, it's going to be more than one player that we target. I keep making the assumption that it's going to be another midfielder. And I think maybe that's with one eye on Elneny maybe leaving in the summer potentially. You know, just kind of looking a little bit further ahead, Granit being another year older. It's an area of the field with Thomas Partey's injury history that I think we probably need to bring some depth in. But yeah, I mean, it's interesting. There's very little kind of substantive rumours on that front.
Yeah, the midfield front, yeah, is really quiet. But of course, you know, given the age of Elneny, Xhaka, Partey, like, they have to be thinking about the succession plan at some point. Whether it's this month, I'm not sure really that January will be a midfielder month. I think it might be the winger, it might be the firepower, it might be someone like Mudrik who gives you this lightning pace and, you know, goals and assists and everything else. But I'll be very interested to see what they do and when they do it, you know, because there is a lot of football to play. There's a lot of football to play, and without Jesus giving the squad a boost going into some of the difficult games in January seems like it would be a good idea from a psychological point of view. I know it's not as easy as that. I know you can't just get things done when you want to get them done. But, I mean, do you expect something to happen quickly, or is this a, you know, this is such a weird month because I don't think, A, we've never had this break for World Cup, right? B, we don't know what the impact of the World Cup break is going to have on players. And I don't just mean for the players who were at the World Cup and have come back. A lot of these guys have had like a midweek or a mid-season break. They played some friendlies to get themselves back up to speed. But it wouldn't surprise me if during January, you know, we saw a record number of little aches and niggles and muscle strains and tweaks and all that kind of stuff, not just at Arsenal, but across the Premier League. And that might then also drive demand in the transfer market as well. So I'm asking you an impossible question there, so I retract it because, you know, how the hell would you know? But I do think it's going to be a weird month.
Yeah, I mean, interestingly, in today's press conference, Arteta also pointed out that there's a load of clubs who sacked managers before the World Cup who are going to be looking at the January transfer window as an opportunity for them to you know, bring in players who you know, will you know, help them implement the plans that they have. So he thinks it obviously is going to be quite competitive. I think. Yeah, I think there could be a fair bit more business done in this window than usually happens. I think there'll be some players who start at the World Cup, maybe players that people didn't really know about, who suddenly find themselves able to move super quickly. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's so little business seems to get done in January that isn't usually panic buying.
Yeah.
It's unusual to have such a long build up to it. In terms of doing business early, I mean, given our striker situation, I am absolutely paranoid about, you know, Nketiah getting a knock, because if he does, then you are so short. I mean,
yeah.
There is nobody else in the squad who has those particular qualities. The only other guy is on loan in France and he's doing quite well, but I just can't see us enacting a kind of emergency recall option on Balogun. So, and even then, I mean, Jesus, he's a kid who's still learning his trade, and that would be a hell of a lot of pressure to dump on him at this time of his development.
So you're saying you think it's relatively important that we give ourselves depth as quickly as we can?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it wouldn't take much to kind of knock us a little bit right now. Mm. I know that we've got a lot going for us, and I feel that Arteta's confident. He thinks all the players have come back in good nick and it's all okay and everything. But from a supporter perspective, I think a timely boost with a new player, something to just kind of get the Emirates jumping and on its, you know, if I'm feeling nervous, that means I'm sure there are other people feeling nervous, and that can very quickly transfer itself to the pitch. If we can keep the positive energy around the whole club going, and I think a signing, particularly a big signing, could probably do that, especially if it's one that actually makes a difference on the pitch quickly, then that actually could just give us a nice little nudge to kind of kickstart this what is going to be an absolutely manic period.
Well, that was going to be my final question. Like kickstart, momentum, pick up where you left off, all those kinds of things that we all want to see happen, but, you know, saying it and doing it are very different things, of course. I don't think it's only a challenge for Arsenal, though. I know we had tremendous momentum. Some clubs might have gone into the World Cup and said, thank fuck there was a World Cup break. We can just sort of sit back, assess, you know, get ourselves going again, and, you know, off we go. But, you know, for us, I think it was ill-timed. Nevertheless, there is still that physical aspect of it, and teams that haven't played together for, you know, 4 or 5 weeks can sometimes take a bit of time to get going again. So is that like the most important part of this, is just trying to find that momentum straight away?
I think 3 points by hook or by crook against West Ham is just so important. I'm expecting it to be a real struggle. I mean, West Ham are, like all the clubs coming back, they're going to be like desperate to make a mark. I mean, they've been able to draw a line under what for them was not a very good first half of the season. Mm-hmm. They haven't had a huge amount of players go away. They'll be jumping at the bit, really, to do Arsenal over, the league leaders. They know exactly. They'll have looked at everything that we've done in the first half of the season. They'll be trying to figure out how is it that we can, you know, minimize the Arsenal effect. The first two games actually kind of seem really, really important, because then you look at what comes up in January and you're kind of like, if you don't go into that period with momentum, it doesn't take very long to suddenly go, oh God, you know, that 5-point gap is suddenly you're chasing and you've got people up your backside. And what have we got? And we've got Newcastle, who are obviously on a terrific run. We've got Spurs, we've got Manchester United. That's a January.
There's a lot going on, isn't there?
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot going on. So, yeah, we've got to start fast. Arteta knows that. I mean, he's been talking about it to the player. He knows, the players know, everyone knows that we've got to start fast. And I think he'll be hoping for a kind of raucous Boxing Day, drunken, loud crowd and atmosphere to get things going again, because I think the players might need the crowd's help.
Well, fingers crossed. So basically what you're saying is everybody needs to get pissed up and leery before they go to the Emirates on Monday night, yeah?
Yes, okay. Absolutely. All right. But behave.
Behave. Yeah. We don't want any of this to come back and bite us in the arse. All right. We'll see what happens. Andrew, thank you very much. Merry Christmas to you and yours.
Merry Christmas to you. See you soon, I hope.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. Thank you very much indeed to Andrew. You can find him on Twitter. He is at @AAllenSport, at @AAllenSport. So, football is back. And as ever, we will have a preview podcast of the West Ham game over on Patreon. That's happening on Saturday. I'm like one of Santa's elves, working fucking overtime at Christmas. But no, that will be there for you guys on Patreon. If you want to sign up and support everything that we do on Arsblog, you can do it at patreon.com/Arsblog. Costs a fiver a month. You get access to all the content that's there, exclusive podcasts that we do every week. And it helps, as we say, support everything that we do on the site. James and I will be here on Tuesday with an Arscast Extra, looking back on whatever happens against West Ham. And for now, it remains only for me to wish you and yours, if you are celebrating, a very, very Merry Christmas. I hope you eat well and drink well and look after each other. And that goes for you guys that don't celebrate Christmas too. Look after each other, eat well, drink well, take care, and we will catch you on the next one. Until then, cheers. Bye-bye.
Following the universal acclaim in which the sprinkly salt meat wanker, known as Salt Bae, is held, Arsenal Football Club have today announced a partnership with Pepper Pang. He's as hot as his corns. Peppercorns, that is. Chief Marketing Officer Strungeon Food Cart said,
"We believe people like salt
and pepper. All we can say is, don't push it."
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.